Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. This is Nick, and I'm here with my co-host, Terry, and this is Hell No, the radio show. Hell No, the radio show is a socially conscious water cooler talk show about what's going on in the world as we feature guests and callers who express their thoughts. Hell No is friendly, it's funny, it's real, and it's focused on empowering the truth. What we do is we give a voice to people who feel left in the dust. This program is not democratic, however, it's not fascist, it's not politically correct, or a place for sacred cows. What we do is we advocate peace, critical thought, education, reading, and social awareness. So go ahead and write down this telephone number and give me and Terry a call to share your thoughts on our discussion-stirring topics on tonight's Hell No episode. Telephone number is area code 718-508-9419. Then when you're prompted, dial option number 1. Telephone number again, 718-508-9419. Hell No is a one-hour show, and we take your calls in the order we receive them, so please sit tight. Want you all to know to email us as well with any email or any suggestions for topics for our program, as well as guests. We can be reached at hellnoradioshow@gmail.com, and also find the episodes anytime on demand on our Facebook page, facebook.com/hellnotheradioshow, and follow us on Twitter at Hell No Radio Show. Partial support for Hell No the Radio Show comes from our loyal and beloved sponsors, and Terry is going to tell us about them now.
Well, our primary sponsor is Ms. Jane Flint, body worker and massage therapist extraordinaire. She is the best of the best. If you have never had a professional massage, you don't know what you're missing. Ms. Flint has been trained in over 15 different disciplines of massage, body work, and activated stretching. She's one of the very few people who is certified to do the activated stretching that they use in the Olympic athletes. She has a list of clients that would make most people shudder, not from terror, but from delight. She has worked on many celebrities, and they've been more than satisfied with her work. She is just simply a terrific body worker. He can be located at, or she is located at, 10335 West Oklahoma Avenue in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Suite 205. And you can reach her by phone, 414. And I'll give you the rest of the number in a minute here. Someone just interrupted me with something. Nick, I'm going to have you take over just for a moment here. I'm sorry. I apologize.
All right. Well, I don't have the number handy, but it's good to be interrupted by something that's good, so I hope it's something good. I'm going to go and list a rundown of our topics tonight. We're going to talk about making significant website and IT changes. That's IT for information technology. Some business considerations and things that I've been experiencing and just wanted to share. We're also going to talk about a 5-meter-long python found in living in an Australian home. For 10 years, can you imagine a python living in your ceiling for 10 years? Wow. We'll also talk about North Korea and its fun with missiles, not so much fun for South Korea. We'll talk about the study of history, psychiatry, and psychology, why those are so important, and why we are failing. We'll also take a look at the lack of work ethic, and yet worse than that, the lack of will to do the work in the first place. Of course, our honeybees and bumblebees are always on our topic, so we'll talk about the honeybees and bumblebees and an update on their fight for survival. And then we'll circle back with other work. Again, it kind of ties in there. Work ethic, honeybees, bumblebees, and unemployment compensation and some of the scam qualities of it. Of course, the laws of attraction and quantum mechanics, easy for me to say, is one of our top topics for tonight. It really works. We'll talk about the laws of attraction. It might mean different things to different people, but hey, if it works, who cares why? Maybe we should pay attention. And for music, we have the Rolling Stones, The Sympathy for the Devil. You know, I don't know if I should have told that one. Usually leaves that as a surprise.
But anyhow, I apologize. We had a lightning strike here, and that's what threw me off for a moment. Right next to the house here. We had a lightning strike, and it was really pretty amazing. Thankfully, didn't lose power or anything like that. We may have lost a window. But anyhow, let me finish about our sponsor, Ms. James Lynch, massage therapist and body worker extraordinaire. Her phone number is 414-321-9030. That's 414-321-9030. And if you're within 100 miles, believe me, it's worth the drive. Incredibly wonderful professional massage. She does 30-minute, 60-minute, and 90-minute massages. And if you have specific problems or difficulties or leftovers from an accident, she can do wonders for you. Once again, Ms. Jane Flint, 10335 West Hope Palm Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and been a loyal sponsor of ours for a long time. So, with all of that blabbing done, and I don't mean about
blah,
her
blah, blah, blah,
in,
blah, blah,
in general, I got to tell you, Nick, that this last week has just been grueling in terms of watching employees not work, watching companies not be able to get employees because no one wants to work. It has become an absolute plague. People will not get off of their dead asses to work. And they complain about not having any money. And they readily go and use their little green cards for free food.
I'm sorry.
And complain because they may not be able to use it on everything they want to.
You know, Terry, if it hits the fan, they're the first to go. I'm sorry, bless their little hearts. But, you know, those of us with work ethic, and I'm going to say that this came up in a conversation today with a lawyer in her 30s. And, of course, I always throw myself on the sword and say, oh, it's all my fault. I did, you know. But, no. This young girl, and she, you know, she's a friend of mine, and I know that she was just, you know, also kind of doing the same thing. But she said it's the millennials, and it's us in our early 30s. And she says, you know, it's our fault, you know, blame us, you know, because emails get buried. And I don't know if you need to print the email out and, like, staple it to people's hands for them to respond to it. It just gets kind of lost in the dust, and this happens. So it's not only at all levels of education, unfortunately. It's just, it's rampant, and it's like you got to fight to keep – it's what I find, it's like momentum and motivation. I mean, I don't know what kind of motivation you need to instill to keep momentum, but there's a failure of momentum, and I think the motivation's lacking. And I think the problem is – I'm going to go back to this whole thing. The first time I heard about every kid gets a trophy, what a crock of shit that is, you know. There's absolutely no incentive to compete and do well, and it's not getting any better, and we're seeing, again, like, you know, I've done work with, I don't know, maybe there's some good ones out there, but, you know, and it sounds
this is getting to be ageist an absolute epidemic, and it is to a point where a company that I have a relationship with, I do not own it in any way, shape, or form, but I have a relationship with this company in that one of my companies does work for them. And they had about 140 people lined up to do summer work. That's a goodly number of people, even a high school student if they're over 18. And of those people, 60% did not show up for the first day and continued not to show up. After going through all the time, trouble, and cost of indoctrination training and everything else. And, you know, I'm just going to leave it at that. If we have any callers out there that will comment on it, I'd love to hear. But it has gone to the point where, you know, you and I talked about this long before we ever did the radio show, about the loss of work ethic and the loss of responsibility in the current generation. Everything that I had protected, man, I'm not having any better time than you are. everything that I predicted has come to pass, and then some. You know, it's actually happening faster than I expected.
Which is true, it's just, I think there's just an acceptance that no one's getting around to things. I mean, we used to joke about the summertime and, you know, certain times in the calendar year, that it just seems like nobody's at work and no one's doing anything. And it just seems to be that people, you know, there used to be this, expectation that you would return someone's communications within a certain amount of time. You know, I find people who are my age or older still do quickly and are prompt about it, probably because they, you know, the idea is answer the call, find out what they want, get with it so you can move on. But others are just finding it common that people will get back to me, you know, weeks later.
If at all.
And someone told me that there was a study that said sometimes certain people in generations need to receive an email three times before they respond to it. And I just think it's bad. We have a caller on the line. Let's say hi to our caller whose telephone number ends in the last four digits of 6838.
Hello, caller.
Hello. Good evening. And, you know, I hear exactly what you're saying in terms of lack of work ethic, and it is epidemic. Why is that? Well, we, the baby boomers, grew up in a different culture where work was valued as not only a way of perhaps increasing your standard of living, but certainly decreasing your ignorance. And so there was value on education as a whole, history, art, biology, botany. Today I see that there's a lack of focus, and there's, the kids seem like they're thrown to the wind. And
yeah,
some of that is on parents, but some of that's on society and on the generation too. I mean, there's
a
level of...
I think an awful lot more is really on the generation and the society and the culture. People have been blaming the folks of the 60s for all of the ills with their children, and I'm afraid that having had enough contact with those folks and being one of them, I've not seen that, but I what I've seen was a culture shift and a cultural shift that not only excused just about any lazy-ass behavior that you can imagine, but encouraged it. And part of this has, you know, again, been linked directly to the Internet and the Internet's effect on society. Everything is just a click away. Oops, wait a minute, that click didn't work. Oops, that click didn't work either. Oh, we'll just keep clicking. And it has produced a society, you know, again, not everyone, but a very large chunk, and it is a majority now, of basic idiots who are surviving at our behest and in no other way. And once we are out of the workforce, they're so screwed, it's unbelievable. And again, I will use an analogy that Nick has many times about a certain film that he loves to tout, which is Idiocracy. You know, we're pretty much there. We're pretty much a step away from that whole thing, maybe a step away. It has become an unbelievable plague. And I don't see any easy way out. I only see one particular way that we're going to accomplish anything, and that's education. And we don't have the educators to do it now.
I think in another show that where Nick and I were talking, we had a similar conversation about the generation of people that can create change we're losing now.
Well,
and
generation that meant change.
Mm-hmm.
That generation meant change, and it was squashed. You can thank our beloved folks in Washington for that. They crushed that generation. It was the generation of hope, generation of education, generation of knowledge, and they crushed it.
But I see basic skills such as, you know, how do you check your oil? How do you check your tire pressure? What do you do when the temperature runs hot? Don't drive the car. Now, that may sound very simple, but I have seen this happen. So it's out there.
It's I see a difference between the difference between a culture of learning versus a culture of accessing information. And I'm gonna go ahead and blame it's true though. And I blame the internet. I've been saying this for years. It's making us lazy. Spell check, no one has to learn how to spell anymore. I mean, we're not learning because we don't have to. We don't have to. We have machines and devices to do it all for us.
So we think spell check doesn't work worth a damn. Grammar check works even less. So we have a bunch of, not even literate individuals punching buttons. And that is on every level unacceptable.
One of the things that became apparent to me just of late is the lack of research skills. And again, growing up in an era where we actually went to libraries and had carols. We had to physically go get books and then realize, okay, I'm on the wrong track. Let me go get another set of books.
But they've become button pushers, and if it's not on the internet, it doesn't exist.
If it isn't two clicks on the internet, it doesn't exist. I hear exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I just went looking for a company today that sells a particular product, and the first thing my assistant did was try to find it on the internet. Well, then he tried to find it in the internet white pages. Then he tried to find it on the internet yellow pages. Then he tried to find it on Google. He said, well, they're out of business. I said, I don't think so. The company's been around for years. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that you can't find them on the internet. They're not there. And
right.
It's one of the biggest safety equipment companies in the United States. Surprise, surprise. There are companies
that
aren't on the
internet. They're in the phone book. Are they in the phone book?
Yeah, when I picked up a regular phone book, I found them. They were still there, and they were still in business, and I was able to get what I needed from them. But,
and you probably got funny looks.
Oh, God.
What are you doing with that big book, Mr. Terry?
It must be really difficult.
I like what Nick said in that it's become an access generation. So, therefore, if I access this information, then I have studied, learned, or whatever. Okay, and quite frankly, that's not true. You have to... The critical thinking is gone. Yeah.
It's all,
Well, here too.
Anyhow, let's talk about...
We'll move on from this in a moment, but also just one more thing about learning. I have a theory that when the person slows down the process of learning, I think that the ability to learn is somewhat, and I have no proof at all for this, just my hunch, that the person's ability for learning, if they don't, like it's a skill like a muscle, and that translates also into learning how to play a sport, learning how to play the guitar, learning a foreign language, learning how to do as opposed to accessing and memorizing. And unfortunately, so much of our education system is geared towards testing. I mean, here in the state of Texas, we're the worst with the STAR test.
Mm-hmm.
These kids come out, they don't know anything. They know how to pass the STAR test. That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. When it comes to ethic, I go back to motivation and momentum. I like those words right now, motivation and momentum. I'm trying to get it with a charity full of adults, mainly finance and lawyer professionals. And, I can't get it. It's like poking them with a stick, like, hello, wake up. And unless you have a plate, carrot cake or peach pie right in front of their nose, they're not going to budge off the couch. So it's just laziness. And I don't know what, if it takes a swift kick in the butt or, some freak out like 2008, you'd think people would have learned from that. I don't know.
None of that's working. The reward thing isn't working. None of that works. And by the way, you'll never get them to make that peach pie or that carrot cake because they don't know how. Let's just let's jump to something else here before frustration levels go through the ceiling. Nick, you had brought up the python that lived in the house in the Australian family.
Yes, sir.
Tell me a little about that, because normally I'd be the one who would bring that up.
I know.
You brought that one. I've been way too busy.
It's been a red letter day for me on a lot of fronts, so I will take this one. All right, so I was looking at the BBC in the background. I look at the BBC because I no longer trust either any domestic news. I can't get real news, not until the election's over. So I've been looking out over. I've been looking at the BBC because I get, and the BBC seems to like facts, and I like facts. Facts are good. So anyways, in Australia, this woman woke up to a 5-meter python, and again, a 5 meter as well.
17 feet.
Right, you know,
yeah.
Anywhere outside the U.S. Here, none of us know what meters. I had to think. Anyways, it says a huge snake that lived in the roof of the Australian home for 10 years has tried to upgrade to their master bedroom. Trina from Mission Beach in Queensland woke on Monday to find the 5.2-meter scrub python named Monty.
Yeah, that is an amethystine python from Australia. That's the largest snake on the Australian continent, for those of you who might be interested. They're very slender, by the way.
He was stretched out from her lounge room to her bedroom. Monty managed to turn on a light. He turned a light on and knocked over a lamp before the snake catcher, Dave Goodwin, arrived. Mr. Goodwin induced the snake to wrap around his forearm before catching him in a plastic home brewing jug. Where's the rest of my story? Okay. He told BBC that the 40-kilogram snake was choking his arm to death before he transferred it into the tub. He says when you go near them, they have a real deep gurgle in their throat, which means, in other words, don't come near me, he said. He says to encourage the snake to grab hold of his arm, Mr. Goodwin first grabbed it near the head with a pair of tongs. He said, quote, the tongs won't hold it. It's too big. So I used the tongs to divert its attention and grab it by the scruff of the neck, he said. That ensures the snake lets go of everything else, wraps himself around my arm. You go on to say that big fat, so they called it. Mrs. Hibbard said a friend staying at her house first noticed the gargantuan reptile's presence. She said, I guess he came to have a bit of feed or say hello. I love the British. They're hilarious. Or, well, they're not British, Australian.
Oh, don't call an Australian.
To me,
British,
I think it's
kind of
close, so I'll play my dumb American card there. But it says he's got a bit senile, the snake. She says, I have no idea, she says. But she thinks that he's been living in the living room above her house for many years. Monty has now been transferred to a sewage pond within the Cassowary Coast Regional Council area, where it is hoped that he will take care of a rat infestation. She says, I guess Monty has gone to snake heaven and I'm going to miss this big fatso. So anyways, a bit of light fun there with, so Terry, what do you think about what this Mr. Goodwin said about handling the snake?
Oh, he's another, you know, he's a Kiwi goofball. Realistically, the scrub pythons are quite slender. 80 kilograms, they said 40 kilograms, I'm sorry.
40,
yes. About 90 pounds. Very heavy for an amethystine python. And at 5.2 meters, it's over 17 feet, probably closer to 18 at that point. Scrub python is harmless, and the lady was probably far more on target than Mr. Goodwin, the so-called snake catcher. She was probably very right about that. The snake was just getting curious and looking at the place from a different angle. Snakes are curious animals. And you notice there was no attempt by the snake to harm anyone. He was just cruising, just looking around.
Did she want the snake removed? Did she want the snake removed or just removed from the den or the bedroom?
Oh, I have no idea. By the article, it sounds like it was one of those where, you know, there's a big snake in the house and it's like the elephant in the room. So we need to move it somewhere.
How would she determine how would it be determined that the snake had been there 10 years?
No idea.
maybe they
knew about the animal years ago or what have you. They may have seen it up there. Who knows?
I wonder about her lack of just, you know, kind of like she missed Monty. And it sounds like he has a name.
Well, that would indicate to me that he had been around for a while. So
yeah, I think
they probably knew about him living
more
up there and didn't bat an eye. They were
out of
very
sight,
much
out
all
of
right for him.
I have another theory.
So.
I have another theory on it.
I think mm-hmm. he kept the road away from the house pretty well, and they lived copacetically for a long time until he found his way into the main part of the house.
There,
mm-hmm.
I have a theory on this. I have a theory that she probably had pets that might have alerted to them, because I know I have from time to time, I have a cat that will run back and forth along the kitchen, the top of the kitchen cupboards, pointing up to, I mean, I've got tall, like 10-foot ceilings in there, so there's a good space up there. And the cat will be, you know, signaling towards the ceiling and kind of pawing at it and flipping out. So either there's a ghost up there, or some sort of something is up there. And, you know, I've looked before, and you usually find snake shreds because they, you know, they shed, or sheds or shreds. I'm not sure which it is, but I think maybe an animal alerted. Maybe she just had a feeling. Maybe she just knew. But at any rate, it's a cool snake story, and I'm excited that I found it.
Yeah, it's a great story, and I'm very proud of the Australian lady for keeping her cool and not making a big deal about it, because it wasn't a big deal other than it's a pretty neat snake, and
right. Those
snakes rarely get that big. Most of the time, maximum size on those snakes is about 14 feet, so that's a really big
right.
one.
Well,
the biggest
one
I found was about 19 feet, so this one is really close to record size.
Well,
so
quickly...
Anyway,
well, but quickly, before I dispense of the fun from the BBC today, I wanted to just hit up something that I think might be just something good for people to know about and be aware of. Again, something you might not see in the domestic and local news in your area, but it's about North Korea. Kim Jong-un is having a fun time, claiming he has a series of technological breakthroughs he's developing in missiles. South Korea not so excited about it, though. And Japan is now warning that North Korean missiles pose a, quote, serious threat, unquote, after the country carried out new tests in defiance of international sanctions. It says North Korea launched two missiles within hours of each other, with one flying about 400 kilometers and reaching an altitude of 1,000 kilometers. Again, that's a scientific... Terry, can you translate that for us? No, 400 kilometers is 250 miles, so 1,000 kilometers is going to be, what, like 600 miles? It says a confirmed successful test would mark a step forward for North Korea after four failed launches in recent months. South Korea, the U.S., and NATO have also expressed alarm over the latest tests. So, you know, I don't know. Okay, but here more information. It says both launches are believed to have been intermediate-range missiles with about the range of 3,000 kilometers, enough to hit South Korea, Japan, and the U.S. territory of Guam in the Western Pacific. You know, I don't know. These are so tough. It's so tough today, Terry, to know, unless you've seen it yourself. I mean, this could all just be a bunch of BS, but it's... I don't know. I mean, it's on the BBC here. Yeah. That's what they're reporting. So
I'm gonna chime in with something regarding news sources. Like you, I depend a great deal upon the BBC. But what I do is I also look at Al Jazeera, because they actually have one of the best reporting teams in the world, and they stick to the facts. Al Jazeera is not some, you know, crazed group of Islamic fundamentalists. They are a very respectable news organization, and I find their articles to be really well done.
Yes.
Everything from their writing style to their fact-checking is very professional. So I kind of combine the two. If I see something I'm interested in, I'll look at Al Jazeera.
I've heard that before,
BBC.
And I've been used to looking at BBC more, but listen to this. I've heard from people that at least this one individual who has the Dish Network has said that both BBC and Al Jazeera have disappeared off the lineup.
They have, yes. That is true, and it's really sad. And, I will give you an example of something real quickly. That is the Orlando thing that happened last week. Al Jazeera was actually very critical of the fact that individual who was obviously mentally challenged in some way had not garnered any attention from people who were medical experts, psychiatric experts, and they also commented, and I talked to you about this earlier today, that this is the sort of person that these ultra-radical groups are looking for. They want to recruit people like this. And
I agree
this
with
is
that.
Coming from
perfect.
Well, this is coming from Al Jazeera. So they take, I think, a very objective view of this whole thing, and they, you know, they really laid it on. So enough of that, and let's just have some sympathy for the devil.
There you go.
Nick and the Boys, the Rolling Stones, sympathy
seems
for the devil.
Hold on, I don't have it. I have to find it quick.
Oh, no.
No. I mean, I have it.
Intermission music.
I have it. Is it just under S? Tell us a little bit about the Rolling Stones for a second while I...
Oh, you don't want me to. I know way too much. We'll just leave it at that. I don't want to just break people's hearts.
I'll find it in a second.
Let's talk about bumblebees for a moment. The bees that can't fly.
I found it, but okay, it's 7 minutes long, but do you want the whole thing?
Oh,
it's 7 minutes long.
We'll listen to 5 minutes of it. How's that? Let's go.
5 minutes while we think about bumblebees. Everyone's assignment is to think about bumblebees. Go.
Okay.
We are the least professional team out there right now. I think we're going to get an award.
Thank you.
Sorry, we have gone over our 5-minute mark.
That,
shame on me.
Yeah, that
horrible conductor.
That was,
train about to go off the cliff. Anyways,
I got to throw something in here. Next time, please stay away from live versions of things. That's why it was that long. That was
okay.
A fairly mediocre version of "Sympathy for the Devil" by the Rolling Stones. Keith Richards' guitar work on there sounded like he was chewing magic mushrooms for a day before he started to play. That was awful.
Well,
so enough editorializing on that. But let's talk about the bees for a moment. Just a moment. We've been discussing the plight of the bees. Not just the honeybee, but bumblebees are really being wiped out at an alarming rate. I saw the first bumblebee that I've seen all year. I used to see hundreds every day. I saw the first one of the year 2 days ago. That's really scary. That's really, really scary. These are our pollinators. These are the creatures that give life to our plants and our crops. We're wiping them out, guys.
Hey, we got a caller. Maybe our caller knows what to do or why.
Sure, let's take our caller.
Let's take this other caller. Join the party. The person whose phone number ends in 1974, the year before I was born. Ha ha. Hello.
Hello there. My name is Bill, and I'm familiar with at least one other person that's on the show. And, if the bees die, we die. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Yep.
Pretty simple.
I can't imagine who you would know on the show by your accent. I could probably give a wild guess, though.
Oh, I think you could do that.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show.
That
wouldn't be any fair, so we'll just leave it at that.
Welcome to the show.
You know,
very, very pleased to have you, Bill.
Being from the South, I mean, there's some development here, certainly not by city standards. I would say that this is still country, but not the way it used to be 30 years ago. But, I mean, the fact that you saw the first bumblebee, and I walk outside my door and there's 12. You know, they've got nests bored into the wood here, there, and I mean, they're everywhere.
Those are actually not bumblebees. Those are wood borers, they look something like bumblebees. They're about the size of bumblebees, but they are not bumblebees. Those are wood bees.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a different animal, and they don't do a lot of pollinating. They are mostly animals that exist by chewing up, as you can imagine, cellulose, wood. They chew it and get some nourishment out of it. And they're interesting little animals. They don't sting, by the way. They don't have the ability to sting you. So people are unnecessarily afraid of them, but they can do some real serious damages to your beams and so forth if they aren't treated. Our bee situation is really getting serious. I have a nature reserve down in the Ozark Mountains, and the area where I have it is still fairly pristine. There were two large Luna moths spotted there about 4 weeks ago. One of my neighbors called me and told me about it. But these are these gigantic green, light green moths that years ago we used to see them, you know, every few days you'd see one of these big, beautiful things wandering around at night. Now it's like, you know, call the media. The same thing with the Cecropia moths, which are the very large, sort of earthy toned with reds and oranges on it. Moths that are kind of the giant moths of the Midwest. And I used to see them even in the city when I was a kid. And now that I don't know when the last one was that I saw, probably 5-10 years ago. Our bees are just taking a beating.
Why is that important? I mean, this is, we're not talking about the bees are taking a beating. Oh, the poor bees. I mean, what this ties into life. So can you kind of address that a little bit more?
Yeah, well, as I have said on numerous shows, the bees are basically our lifeline and the lifeline for the plants that we need for survival, not just the ones that we eat, but certainly the ones that give us oxygen and everything else. The bees are the primary pollinators that, you know, along with some of the bats, which people have also, you know, the damn near destroyed in most places. The bats are very, very necessary. They are not only pollinators, but they're nectar feeders. They also eat mosquitoes, depending upon the species. They're fairly remarkable animals. But it's all these animals that we decide we're going to fear. I had a friend who used to go out, and she would catch bumblebees by letting them rest on her hands. I don't think she ever got stung, actually. I remember it. But she used to get them to, you know, get up to them real gently and get them to walk on her hand. And she'd get them used to her. And she claimed she could identify particular bees, and she would go out there most every day in her garden and play with the bumblebees. We need a lot more of that and a lot less raid, you know. And the GMOs are not doing us any favors either. Bill, do you do any farming?
Well, not really. I'm just listening and observing and all this, you know.
I have a thing about I'd like to know about farming. I'll say this. I want to plant as many crops as I can. I want to learn how to grow onions and potatoes. I'm Irish, so I can live on onions and potatoes. What will grow during different times and seasons? And I was out at my friend's parents' ranch in East Texas last weekend. We ate an entire meal. Everything we ate came from the garden. It was, and I picked all these blackberries. I mean, I picked enough blackberries to, I don't even know, but, and I saw them at Kroger, blackberries for $2, and that was on sale for a tiny little box of these suckers. And I thought I picked probably like hundreds of dollars worth of berries. And I'm a good berry picker, by the way.
I'll remember that.
Good.
Well, you know, let's talk about farming. And I was very, very fortunate being in my age group, and I'm 53. To have my paternal grandparents be very much a part of my life. And so at 5 years of age, I was driving a Farmall Cub tractor, and we were plowing peanuts. Basically,
please enunciate clearly when you say that.
Okay. Basically, you know, I think it's the sustainability in the South through agriculture and farming. But, you know, that's a skill. That's a skill that's being lost. I'm not talking about raised bed gardens. I'm talking about, you know, digging with a hoe. Let me enunciate that properly, too. Anyhow, digging with a hoe, okay, and planting seed. How do you make a hill of zucchini, a hill of squash? What are half runners, and how do you get those to run on the corn so that you're not having to bind them in any way or to string them up? Caging tomatoes, why do you plant a tomato halfway up? Then what do you do with the food?
Let's say
we have no electricity, okay? Now we've got to go to drying, which is even a more lost skill that, I mean, we, you know, preserving is a way of doing it, and you can certainly do canning without electricity, but it's a lot more labor intensive.
It is.
Well, remember we had that conversation about my grandparents had some 20 and 30 year old food, and it was some of the best tasting stuff you've ever had in those ball mason jars, and they had an entire upstairs room with several shelves on every wall full of this food, and that's what we ate. There was nothing wrong with
about those jars. Is that the old ones with the zinc tops had a glass liner. And mm-hmm. if that was put on properly, they would last damn near forever. And
you're talking about that milk glass liner.
Inside.
Yes.
That was so thick and such good quality that between that and as long as you got that seal done the right way at the right temperature, that stuff would last almost forever. And it was somewhat labor intensive, but it was part of the way we lived. And
mm-hmm.
I remember my foster mother and my grandmother canning things, and I loved to help, and I loved to watch it, and it was a process. And then it would end up in the fruit cellar. How many people remember that term?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a completely lost skill.
But there aren't a lot of people who know it, and you can't.
It's on the conservation list. Yes, yes.
Yeah, you can't get the zinc top ball jars mm-hmm. anymore, and now everything is a cheap plated stuff, which after a few years, if there's any acid in the material that you're canning, it'll eat its way through and start rusting.
Tomatoes is the acidity.
Oh, yeah.
It'll
gobble that up.
Yeah.
I have fond memories of taking those zinc tops and doing science experiments with hydrochloric acid, but that's another story. Anyhow, I really did. That was a big thing for me. Ever the little experimenter I was. But let's just jump back to the bees for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of comes full circle on that. We are in a position right now where the people who own apiaries, the apiaries, by the way, are places where they raise bees and make honey and so on, are having a devil of a time even with the domestic bees. The wild bees are becoming far, far more uncommon than they used to be. I have a hive at one of my properties that is in a shed, and somebody said, well, you know, you want to get that out of there. I said, not your life. You know, leave the poor things alone. I don't mind stepping around them and, you know, bless them for what they're doing. We've lost the ability to live with things or live around things. We got to kill it. And that's something that we have never really talked about on this show, and we really should. Our response is, kill it. Our response is swat it. Our response is squash it. Instead of living around or living with. And I just heard somebody the other day throw the usual ignorant statement about snakes at me. They only go to one dead one. You know, they probably think the same thing about human beings after what we've done to them. And they'd be a lot more right than we are. They don't destroy their own environment. They are animals that are very secretive and, for the most part, incredibly shy creatures and animals that I've worked with my entire life, and I will argue that point with anybody that wants to come forward. I'm still alive after handling some of the biggest and most venomous snakes on this planet, and I'm just fine. So, sorry, folks. It's all a myth.
I won't kill spiders because they keep the insects out of the home, you know?
That's right. That's right.
The windows, you can have a window open with no screen and no insects will come in because the spiders are protecting it. And it's very rare to run across a spider that is harmful.
Yeah, the only two that we have in the United States are the fiddleback spider, the brown recluse, and several forms of
black
widow. Those are pretty much it. There's one other one that's got some venom, the whiteback spider. You rarely see them, and they're only found in a few places. But the one to be really cautious about is the recluse, because their bite is pretty ugly. And I'm going to repeat what you do with the recluse bite. This is not an approved method. It's something that I came up with for a children's hospital where they were getting bunches of very bad recluse bites. And It worked very well, and it continues to work very well. But ammonia, household ammonia, gently scrubbed into the bite area will neutralize the venom. It breaks down the protein of the venom. And if ammonia follows the strands that occur in a recluse bite. So I didn't officially tell anyone that, but it works like crazy. It works beautifully. You can stop the bite and stop it in its tracks. So,
well, and like on the Gulf Coast here, we have jellyfish, and meat tenderizer takes care of that.
Yep.
That's right.
The pepain and bromelain in the meat tenderizer will get rid of it. Urinating on it will also get rid of it.
I have personal knowledge of this. I was in Kiowa Island, South Carolina, and my girlfriend got bit by a big old Portuguese man of war. That thing was huge. She had bites all the way up from like her head to her toes. It was absolutely awful.
Well, it's not a place. So you honor or what?
Did you pay off her?
We all lined up on the beach, ma'am, and just, mean, it was, we got right to the local hospital, though, and they took care of it. Luckily, we weren't, out too far off into the wilderness, right?
They peed on it over at the hospital instead.
That's right, exactly.
Oh, Lordy.
So you're absolutely right about people just indiscriminately killing without any conscious at all. I mean, there was a moth in the house. I don't have any wool clothes that the moth could get to. And I had a gentleman over, and we were doing some recording. And he went over there and squashed. I said, what'd you do that for? He said, it's a bug.
Right.
And I said, it's a moth. I mean, it's not going to hurt anybody. Come on.
Right. And my mom always told me that God's always watching you, and it's through the insects and all that. And I always think about that. And I let the red wasps out. I mean, people make fun of me, but I catch a red wasp. I put it like a jar over it and put a piece of mail under it. I take it outside and I say, bless your little heart, be on your way. Boom. Because they come down the chimney. They come in the house. I've never been stung. They're not scared of me. I coax them down from the top of the window, and the thing comes down and meets me by the jar. It's like they know the drill, and I don't know that I don't know how well they communicate, but they know that my house is not a bad house that's going to mean them any harm. So for all I know, they get a kick out of me, and they're just little friends, or, actually they could be working for the government now that you think of it, but,
They're drones. They're drones. Well, let's move onward here so we can hit a couple other
definitely
things.
Definitely have a similar story with that, too. I had two big paper wasp nests in my home that I bought a renovation, and there was no power in there. I had to do a lot of work before I could wire this place up to get the inspection and get the power on. So I was sleeping in this home with no electricity, no lighting, of course, wouldn't go to sleep until after dark. And I kept hearing the sound and didn't know what it was, but I was tired and I didn't want to really worry about it. Next thing I know, a couple of days later, I want to see where the sound's coming from. It's a paper wasp nest right over my head with probably 30 or 40 wasps on it, and I've been sleeping with them.
It sounds like a story from Larry Flynn.
Yeah, I never had a problem. But it took brass balls to sleep the next night with the wasp in the house.
Before we get too much farther, I do want to thank our callers for calling in tonight, and especially Bill, who we haven't seen or heard from before. We'd like to hear from you again. It was very much a pleasure having you on. And, Nick, let's hit one last thing here before we go. What should we touch?
Well, why don't you apply the concept of farming and bees to what we were fixing to talk about with the laws of attraction? Because we can pick that up later, but if you believe positive thinking, your crops will grow. Okay, otherwise, if we're not going to hit that, unemployment compensation, it's a scam qualities.
Well, I'll hit the unemployment because it's a little bit simpler. It has gotten to the point where the only way someone is denied unemployment in most states is if they've been filmed raping the boss's wife on his desk, killing the dog, and taking the three children and lining them up and hanging them, and then saying he's not sorry for doing it. It's amazing what has gone on in terms of unemployment. People just plain quit jobs, force bosses to things that will just absolutely force a boss to fire them, and knowing that they are going to get unemployment. They can steal, they can damage things, they can purposely put the companies in jeopardy, and they will still get unemployment. Please explain to me how that works, because I want to get in line for that one. It is an outrage. Hell no, we do not need any of that in our culture anymore. We need, if there's a fair situation where a company goes out of business or something, and there are unemployed workers and unemployment has been paid into by the company, then yes, they should get something. But other than that, most of what we see with unemployment really boils down to people scamming these days. It really does. It's really pretty sad. So with that, Nick, any other bits and pieces that you want to throw in there?
Just about.
We've got about 60 seconds here.
Boring stuff about information technology and IT. When people are going to change out websites or do different things for their businesses, make sure that everything is backed up. Make sure that you have all the information you need, and expect there maybe to be a downtime where there's things are down for a while. I've experienced some challenges with this lately, and I just want to shake people sometimes, but you know, the technology is great, but when it fails, it seems like it all fails at once. And be able to have things backed up in a way that you can operate without the access to everything that you otherwise expect to have. And that's my
I was just gonna say, if you don't have it backed up in three separate places, you're not safe.
Yep, that's true. I have a question for everybody here. This is a universal question, very quick. When you were kids, do you remember a product that was sold at the little 5 and 10 stores and you know, little local grocery store or general store, and you could blow your own balloons? It was a material that came in a tube.
Yes.
And you got
it
a straw. But boy, you could make some really neat things, and it came in blue. You remember that?
Yes, I do
and
remember
then
that. I love
tied,
that.
Tied it off,
stuff
and you had your own little instant balloon. It was great
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else seems to remember that.
Well, I don't remember. What
I remember
product that was.
I
remember
it had a really strange odor to it.
I bet the other caller remembers that. Do you remember
that was a fun one.
All right. Well, listen, y'all, we're out of time, but I want all these callers back on next week when we try to learn about the laws of attraction
everyone.
And other things. Thank you all. We'll be back next week on Hell No, the radio show. Have a good night.
Yeah.
Great. Enjoy it. Thank you.
Good night.